T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and this week's second show, it's looking like it's going to be just as good as the first. Coming up, we'll speak to our VA reporter, Jonathan Kopanger, about some issues he's found with the usage of mail over at the department. After that, Jake Hughes, you know him, right? The producer of this show, he's going to talk to us about his new mission, and that mission is to stop smoking. Jake's progress is going to be closely monitored by ConnectingVets.com, and he's going to tell us all about his plan of action in just a few minutes. Later, Hill Vets founder Justin Brown is going to be live in studio. Now, Justin takes pride in doing his job, and his job is keeping an eye on legislation that affects us in the veteran community. He'll fill us in on everything of note taking place on Capitol Hill that vets need to know about. And then Bunker Labs' Dean Bunshu from Bunker Labs Raleigh-Durham. He's going to join us to talk about the upcoming Bunker Labs Raleigh-Durham Muster Thursday. If you don't know what Bunker Labs is all about, they are focused on helping vetrapreneurs get their business ideas up and then running and then flowing smoothly. Just like this show, the Morning Briefing that kicks off right now as we welcome VA reporter Jonathan Kopanger to the show. Jonathan, how are you this morning?
It was rough waking up, but I'm good now.
Yeah, I had I woke up early. Everything was looking good. I was able to make coffee at home, so I didn't have to stop on the way and spend a couple bucks on a cup of coffee. As I'm pulling out of the complex that I live in, someone is driving down Route 1 at about 80 miles an hour with no headlights on. I didn't see them until they were right near me, so I had to slam on the brakes, which of course led the coffee mug to spill all over my pants. Had to turn around, go home, put on new pants, and then come back in. So an inauspicious start to my day, but I'm not letting that hold me back. I needed to get in here and find out what in the heck is going on with the mail over at the VA.
A simple process. When Jake's here, when was the last time that you two have sent a piece of mail out?
I actually sent a piece of mail out 3 days ago to start the automatic payments for my new motorcycle.
Okay.
I can't remember the last time I did.
It doesn't happen that often anymore. I mean, my husband and I, we have a little book of forever stamps we keep on the refrigerator, and every once in a while we have to send something out, but you don't do it that often. But it's a very simple process. One would think it's a very simple process. So, but with the government, nothing's simple. With the VA, anything that's complicated in another agency is going to be doubly complicated in the VA.
Mm.
So just to explain the level of mess up that's at the VA, we're just going to talk about mail and how they deal with mail. So what made me think about this was there was a GAO report that came out last week. Because as you would think, all agencies have to report financial things to a certain, you know, a location so that we know as citizens what the government is spending on things. Well, the VA did their thing. And any guesses of how much money they spent on mail last year? I'll tell you, it was over 200 million pieces of mail.
200 million pieces of mail. Let's see. Well, normally it would cost, what is it, like 50 cents to send something in the mail? So
yeah, it's something like that.
$100 million?
You would think. $355 million.
Wow. Oh boy. So they're spending more than a dollar.
Since 2009, it's more than doubled. Now, if you have a little calculator on your phones, either of you have your phones here. If not, I'm just going to throw out some numbers.
I have mine. All right. Hold on. Let me get my calculator.
So while you're getting that out, I'll explain this. You know, the VA is split up into three sections. You have the Veterans Health Administration, Veterans Benefit Administration, and then the National Cemetery Administration. I worked for the Health Administration, but I worked on the education side of that. So even then, it kind of breaks down into different things.
Okay, I've got my calculator out now, so right. I am ready.
So there is 170 medical centers.
170.
Seven pharmacies.
Plus seven?
Yep.
Plus seven.
1,055 clinics.
Plus 1,055.
300 vet centers.
Plus 300.
11 extended care places.
11.
There are five district offices.
Five.
50 regional offices.
50.
135 cemeteries.
135.
One national veterans burial ground.
One.
and then 33 soldiers' lots and memorial sites. So what's that total number?
1,767.
Okay. So that's the amount of offices that have to report back to, you know, the VA, it's a central thing to get all this information. So as they're reporting all this back, the GAO realized, no, the clinics, those 1,055 clinics mm-hmm. and the 300 medical vet centers, they're not reporting anything.
Oh.
The problem is the way the VA has mail set up. And one would think, when I first started, I started at the VA June 2011. Within the first week, and I asked my husband last night if he remembered this, within the first week I was complaining because there was no mail machine. I had to send out a piece of mail, and I couldn't just get it stamped. I had to send it to UPS. Wow. It cost me $15 to send out a piece, one envelope, with just a couple pieces of paper in it.
Huh.
The reasoning I was told is because it needs to be more secure. Now, remember, we worked for the health side of things, so a lot of the stuff that people would have to send out on that side would, of course, be secured information. Anything that has your social on it, anything that has your address, anything really that has any sort of information like that, as a VA employee, I have to protect that. I'm not allowed to have that sitting out. I'm not allowed to do anything. It has to be done.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And a little bit makes sense that, okay, you use UPS. It's a little bit more secure. But then the thought is, well, okay, the federal government owns the post office.
Hmm.
Why don't we use that?
Yeah, that's right? I thought government mail, like official government mail, was free.
Yeah, no, it's not. Huh. So you have our education centers, there was 10 of those in the United States, and they're not huge, maybe 100 people average, but really they're not that bad. We didn't send out a lot of mail. Maybe in the 6 years that I was there, I sent out maybe a handful of mail, pieces of mail. But if you add everything that all the others send together, and we're talking a huge section of the VA is not reporting this, how much money is being spent?
Mm. That's a big question and a good question. I mean, if we know how much the ones who are reporting it are spending, I think we can take a fairly decent estimate if you multiply it by the ones that aren't.
Right.
And the largest number that you gave me of all those ones during our segment that we like to call doing math with Eric and Jonathan, that 1,055, I think you said it mm-hmm. was, they're not reporting their mail right. usage at all.
Now, to play devil's advocate on this, if somebody were to ask me when I was there how much my office spent on mail, I couldn't tell you. Mm. There's no way I would be able to tell you because our contract with UPS was done from our central office. Now, when I say central office, I mean I was on the employee education system. So that's what I caught my central office, not VA central office. Even though we were considered part of the main office, we were a little bit separate. So our CFO for our part of the organization had a contract set up with UPS.
Okay.
Each individual organization, each individual office can come up with their own system for doing this. Wow. So you could use the post office, you could use UPS, you could be FedEx, you could use anything you want, as long as you could prove that there's some sort of security to it.
Hmm.
And then you don't have to report this. Yeah. And that's just one little aspect of the VA. One small little thing that should be very simple, as having a mail machine or just getting a book of stamps every once in a while and then reporting that back. But the VA can't even do that.
Yeah. That's very, very interesting, and it kind of seems to be indicative of the issues with, again, the bureaucracy over there. As we talk about the VA, most of the issues are with things like this,
yep.
things like paperwork, things like getting an appointment. Once you get in there, things tend to go fairly well. It's just getting in there and getting things working the right way, and if they're spending that much on mail, I mean, I seem to remember the time when I was in the military that I sent the most mail was when I worked at recruiting. I was a public affairs officer for a recruiting district in Jacksonville, Florida. We covered North Florida, South Georgia, and for a while, mm-hmm. a little bit of South Carolina. And I never had to put stamps on anything. I just kind of put it there and they came and took it. And I thought that official government mail, like you didn't even have to pay for. So maybe that was just us or the military or something.
Yeah, you're supposed to have the intra-office mail system.
Right.
And there is even a directive for the VA about mail. And it was last time anything was done to it was in the 90s. And one of my side jobs at the VA was I was the mail manager. So I was in a civilian building. So we didn't have we had a mail room, but it was civilian. There were things that I was supposed to do. I was supposed to report, but I had no clue. Nobody ever told me. I had never seen this direction until yesterday when I looked this up. Hmm. I had never seen this policy before in my life.
It's one of those things that you don't think about. And I think now people think about it less because so much is electronic that we do these days. So much of it is electronic mail. But with the VA and my limited time that I dealt with them before I was on my wife's insurance and basically stopped interacting with the DA, with the VA in general when it came to healthcare, I was getting things in the mail from them constantly.
Yeah.
It was a constant paper trail coming from the VA, letting me know about you know, things related to my benefits. Also, sending out mail for things like, hey, we're having a barbecue for families and things like that. Think about how much money they would have spent on something like that. And I mean, it's nice that they're doing that. I never went to any of them, but it seems like the kind of thing where the people who would be more likely to show up to that are going to be the people who are at the VA fairly regularly.
Yeah.
Maybe just put up some posters instead of sending out who knows how much money worth of mail. So yeah, just an interesting, one of those interesting things that we don't think about when we think about the behemoth that is the VA. You don't think about the basics, like how much are they spending to send letters out to people and to send all these different things. I still get updates from the VA once or twice a year on my like disability rating and all that stuff. And again, if they're sending those out to every veteran, that adds up. That certainly adds up.
And I think part of the problem is everybody, especially, well, a lot of the political side of this is, let's just throw some more money at the VA, let them build some more stuff, and that'll take care of things. Let's start a new program. Let's just throw more money. And they do that, but then nothing is done. We have all these new medical centers that are coming in. I forget how many, but there's the last law that was passed.
That was like 30-something. Yeah.
So again, those are going to be little islands that are going to be set up. They're going to be created, and then it's be, okay, figure out how to work things. And so they're going to come up with their own little policies in that medical center that's not going to be the same as the next medical center. And so you have all these little things, and it's not huge things. Mail is not a huge issue. But when you look at it from, you know, on top of the Empire State Building, yes, it's massive. $355 million. I could use that.
You're dealing with bulk when it comes to mail from the VA. So, you know, if you think about like, it's not that bad when you look at it on a person-to-person basis, each person at the VA who works there, again, this is what, the second largest government agency that there is. There's a lot of people working there. There's a lot of correspondence going out to VA patients. There's a lot of correspondence going out to other companies that the VA works with. It just all adds up. And $350 million, you could take that and give a dollar to every American citizen. So think about that. That's a lot of money that if you could take from a sum of money and make sure that every American gets a dollar out of it, that's a significant amount. That's a pretty good benchmark to go by. Speaking of the VA and medical care that they have over there, there are various places that offer various programs to help people kick the habit. Which habit? Well, there's a bunch of them, but one important one is smoking. And one important person is in studio with us right now because he's going to talk about the fact that he is not only going to quit smoking, Jonathan, he's going to do so under the microscope of CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com.
Doing a golf
Connecting
clap.
Vets every day. He is the very producer of this show, Jake Hughes. Jake, how you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good. I got my patch on. I got my gum at the ready. And last night was tough, though, because my apartment building, I live on the 10th floor. On the bottom floor, there's a little shopette that sells cigarettes.
Of course.
And so it was a constant fight of, come on, go down, just have one. Come on, it's fine. But, you know, I stayed strong. I didn't smoke. So I'm at the point where I'd about slap my own mother for a cigarette. Don't worry, she'd laugh at that and then probably slap me. But anyway, but I'm confident this time because it's been 16 years. It's time to stop.
Jake, there's a story featuring him. You can see a picture of him and some handsome gentleman in the background, I noticed. God, that guy's good looking. But Jake is in the foreground of the picture with his Houston Astros minor league baseball hat on. And Jake is, as he said,
AL champions, man.
Yesterday, he smoked his last cigarette. He did so on a video that you can see on the Connecting Vets Facebook page. So you can see the story at ConnectingVets.com. And you can check out the Facebook page at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. We're on all the big four. So 16 years of smoking, Jake, and this is something where, you know, we'd be here getting ready for the show in the morning, and then once or twice during the prep time, you would disappear out of the studio. You'd go outside to smoke. It was something that was a part of your day. So what drove you to decide to do this?
Well, a lot of it was doing research for my article, and I found out all the weird health effects. And we all know the main effects of smoking. We know about cancer, emphysema, heart disease, but all the little weird things that smoking can affect you. And the fact that, well, at least for my family, I know I've had two grandparents that died of cancer, not lung cancer, but of cancer. So I know that I might be prone to cancer. So it's time to stop doing things that might invoke that.
Good
but
for you.
Yeah, and mostly it's just, you know what? The more I thought about why I smoke, I could never think of a good reason why.
Yeah.
I can think of all the good reasons why I shouldn't. Like, I know I'll live longer, I'll be able to smell and taste better,
right.
I'll have better time management and all these other things. But I thought, why do you smoke? Well, because I enjoy it. Well, yeah, but it's killing you.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the best advice I honestly got was from my sister. She quit smoking about 2 years ago when she got married. And she quit cold turkey, which I am immensely proud of her for doing. I can't do that. I have to use a patch. But
use
she told
you need.
Yeah, she told me that the best thing she did for herself was just put it clear in her mind, Jennifer, you cannot have another one. That's it. You just can't. And once you get that in your mind, it becomes a little easier. And I had that in my mind all night last night. Like, come on, just go have one cigarette. No, I can't, because one will become two and two will become four and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to be the biggest challenge for you? I mean, you already told us that the little store at the bottom of the building you live in sells cigarettes. Walking by those every day, or anytime you stop to get gas, or anytime you have to go to a mini mart or something like that. What do you see as being the biggest roadblock to you being successful in this?
My own mind, because it's, you know, about cigarettes, it's not just the physical addiction. It's also the mental addiction of, you know, people who smoke usually have an oral fixation, or they have to do something with their hands. Mm-hmm. So that's my worry, because I used to smoke every hour as a way to sort of, you know, get away from the desk, you know, take a breather, come back to see things with fresh eyes. And now, but I'm working on other habits to do so. Like, one thing I'm going to be doing today is, instead of going downstairs and smoking a cigarette, I'll go downstairs and I'll like walk a lap around the building.
Oh, cool.
Do the same thing, to sort of get away from the desk and come back and see things clearly. But because that's all what smoking is about. It's about replacing habits.
Yeah.
And as you watch the videos that we're going to be posting this week on ConnectingVets.com Facebook page, you'll be able to see, and I'll give you all the little tips and tricks, everything I can find to help you quit, because I know I'm going to need it.
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things also. I mean, it's. Do you think it's going to make it harder or easier to quit, the fact that you're going to be followed around by our crew here, shooting a video yesterday, smoking your last cigarette? There's a big picture of you that was up on the homepage yesterday. And now if you go to ConnectingVets.com, click under wellness, that's where you're going to be able to find the updates on Jake. There's a big picture of you hard at work at the computer, not smoking a cigarette. So do you think it's going to make it easier? You think it's going to make it more difficult?
I actually think it's going to make it easier, because I told my family on Facebook that I'm trying the one thing I never tried before: public pressure.
Yeah.
So, because now it's like, I'm going to be posting these videos, and I'm going to be posting updates. I can't be a hypocrite. I can't tell people to quit smoking when I, you know, shoot a video saying, here's how you quit, and then go around and smoke a cigarette. Yeah. I can't do that, because not only does it hurt my journalistic integrity, it hurts myself.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be that guy. I'm not going to be the do as I say, not as I do. I hate that form of leadership. So it's going to help, I think, because I have people counting on me and watching me and depending on me.
And public ridicule helps a little bit.
Well, yeah, that too.
Jonathan knows.
Just from all, story of my life.
From every morning he comes in and all the comments about his wardrobe, his brightly colored shirts, where he sticks out from the rest of the team. Now, what is the plan of attack? Again, you mentioned you have the patch. What other steps are you taking? Or are you just trying to find things as you go that are going to help you?
Well, my plan I have is, like I said, I have some regular chewing gum for in case I ever feel a need, you know, feel that tick, I need a cigarette. I'm also going to be, one of my videos today is going to be about the fact that it's been reported that a lot of people who smoke gain weight, who quit smoking gain weight. That's because nicotine acts as an appetite suppressant, but also because you're no longer doing anything with your hands or your mouth, people tend to snack.
Yeah.
And one of the things you can do is snack on something healthy, like eat some almonds or eat some cheese or something. You know, stay away from the Twinkies and the honey buns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Snack on something healthy. And when I'm at home, I will say I've got blisters on my feet because my dog's been getting a lot of walks.
And that's, I think, another good thing that might help you also is, you talk about breaking habits. You have had to get into a new routine over the last couple of days because Jake, as he just mentioned, his dog, you've never heard Jake mention his dog before. It's because he just got the dog. You think that's going to be a benefit to you in this process?
I think so too. And it's also another reason, because smoking can actually have health effects for your pets.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, I care about my dog. I care about Trixie, my dog. So I don't want to do that. But also, it, like I said, it gives me something else to do. It gives me something, you know, if I want to go out and have a cigarette, well, I'll go take the dog for a short walk.
Replace one habit with another one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's the plan.
Yep. And, you know, one of the things when we moved down here, we moved into a complex that is no smoking. And I haven't talked about it much, but I am still occasionally a smoker. A lot less than I was.
Boo.
I know. And not only that, so when I do, when I'm home, normally now what it is when I'm driving to and from here, it's just a way for that boring 45 minutes sitting in traffic in the morning and in the afternoon. It just gives me something to do kind of during that, which is not a good reason. But when I'm home, when I decide that I'm going to have one, I have to walk outside, go across the street because you're not allowed in our complex. So I have to go walk across the street and sit on the curb over there, or there's a little park over there. When it's raining, then you're obviously not going to do that. But I need to stop as well. Now, I'm not going to do so with a web feature on me and shooting videos every day. I'm just going to have to do that on my own. But, you know, maybe you doing it will also be a good influence on me. And maybe I think I have a couple left in the car today. Maybe I try to make those the last ones that I have. But as we look at Jake Hughes, super producer of this very morning briefing, looking at quitting smoking, working to quit smoking, you just talked about kind of your plan of attack and how you think you're going to tackle this issue. What's the plan of attack for the coverage of it? As you said, you shot a video yesterday smoking your last cigarette. You're shooting another one today. I mean, how regular are the updates going to be on this process?
Well, I know we're at least going to do one a day this week. And depending on how my progress is and how popular this is, we may start doing more videos, sort of like an update vlog of maybe just me sitting there being miserable saying, "Dear God, I want a cigarette, but I can't have one."
I saw people commenting on it, people who I know a couple of them don't know you personally because I know them personally, and it would be very odd if you came across them at some point in your life, considering where they live, but a lot of people cheering you on in this. Do you worry that if you fall off the wagon and have another cigarette and have to say that in the video, do you worry about disappointing the Jake Hughes fandom out there that's hoping that you quit smoking?
If I have a fandom, we're all in a lot of trouble. But yes, I do. But then again, you know what? I've put in my mind, first off, like I said, I cannot have another cigarette. But if for some reason I was to fall off the wagon, you know what? Dust yourself off, get back on,
try again.
Yeah. It's never too early. Yeah. It's never too late to quit. People, you know, my grandmother, she smoked for 40 years, and then she just one day decided, I'm tired of it, and she quit. And she lived a good 15 years after that, and she didn't die of smoking-related illnesses.
Which is a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's never too late to quit. If you've been, I've been smoking for 16 years. If you've been doing it for 20 years, 25 years, it's never too late for your health, because you start healing. Like, I think it's within 8 minutes of smoking a cigarette, your blood pressure drops. And there's charts that I will post online of what health benefits you have after X amount of time after your last cigarette.
Yeah.
And it's just, you look at all these health benefits, and like I told people in the article, you literally have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Why not do it now?
Has anyone commented with any suggestions of what has helped them?
Yes, a couple people have. One person was that the American Legion actually posted somewhere on our social media with the gif of Rob Schneider from the Waterboy. You can do it.
Nice.
But people have told me things like, one person suggested that for my last pack, I switched to a different brand that I don't like and have that last thing. I know that a couple years ago, I was seeing a doctor, and his idea was, I didn't do this because this is too nasty even for me, was to take an ashtray, pour some water in it, and put it in your mouth. Ugh. Spit it out, obviously, but just have that be that last taste of nicotine and tobacco.
Yeah, that would probably
help. That would do it.
Just the thought.
I know I had a tank commander in Iraq that stopped dipping after one night on a lonely mission. He accidentally took a swig from his spit bottle.
Ugh.
You know, so he quit dipping after that.
When I played football in high school as like a freshman, there were a lot of the seniors who used like the dipping tobacco, Skoll, and all those different ones, Copenhagen, all that stuff. They used it. And then they would, it was kind of like a little bit of pressure on the younger guys to use it. And I remember we were on a bus to a game, and a kid, you know, they got him to do it for the first time. They like forced him to do it almost. He voluntarily did it, but only because of the pressure from all the seniors. And he didn't know that you were supposed to spit out the juice.
Oh.
And he just swallowed. He turned a shade of green that you normally only see in Godzilla movies or perhaps in like old Martian movies. It was upsetting. So this is something that we're going to keep an eye on when it comes to Jake, and everybody's going to be watching it. And Jake, you know, I think good for you. And I think I may try to do this alongside you, but in the shadows, kind of like in the picture on that article of ZapConnectingVets.com, where I'm way in the background. The focus isn't on me. I'm just there doing stuff. So, you know, this is going to be an important thing. We'll keep you up to date on it. And Jake will let us know anytime that he finds out something new that is helping him or something that he thinks could help other people who are looking to quit smoking. And he's going to do it on ConnectingVets.com and right here on The Morning Briefing. Speaking of which, we've got a fantastic show still to come. Justin Brown of Hill Vets. I see him out in the waiting area. He's going to be coming on in just a few to talk about everything going on Capitol Hill that affects vets. Then later, the Bunker Labs folks from Raleigh-Durham are going to call in and tell us about their muster this weekend. Stay tuned.
As a military veteran, you know there are things you and fellow vets understand and feel that others may not get.
That's where CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com comes in. Connecting Vets Every Day, a nationwide digital portal connecting military veterans to the information and advice we need to thrive.
Live daily briefings.
Informative and fun.
And all sorts of podcasts by veterans for veterans.
Sponsored by Freedom Mortgage and Harley Davidson.
Welcome back to The Morning Briefing for Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and he is trying to quit smoking, as we've already talked about on today's show, and you'll be able to keep track of that and keep track of his progress. Cheer for him, root against him. I don't know why you do that, but hey, it's a free country. Go to ConnectingVets.com to follow Jake's progress and process as he tries to find new and better ways to help him kick that nicotine habit. And if you're interested in what we're doing at ConnectingVets.com and you're not following us on social media, you, my friend, are messing up. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, not MySpace, not yet. We're working on that. After that comes GeoCities. Then we're going to get an AOL account. And boy, everything's really going to kick off at that point. Speaking of things kicking off, do you know what Bunker Labs is? Well, you might if you listen to this show regularly. We've had some people from Bunker Labs on in previous months talking about what that organization works to do. And in essence, it is working to help veterans find their way in the business world, to get their business ideas up and then running and then keep running smoothly for the duration. Because there are a lot of vets with great ideas out there who just don't know exactly how to develop them, how to get them working all that well. That's what Bunker Labs does. And right now we're going to talk to someone from Bunker Labs in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. His name is Dean Bunshue, and he is an entrepreneur, an accomplished sales professional, and a business advisor who has spent his entire career building successful businesses for himself and his clients by creating high-performance business development and marketing organizations. Before he did that, well, he served in the Army, and we're going to find out a little bit more about him and his history right now. Dean, good morning and welcome to The Morning Briefing.
Good morning, Eric. Really appreciate you having me on the show, and especially appreciate all the great work you do.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And as I mentioned, you served in the Army. Can you tell us a little bit about that? When did you serve? What did you do while you were in? And when did you get out?
Yeah, my career is a little bit crazy. I actually started out serving on active duty as a infantry officer. I was a ROTC grad. Got commissioned in 1996, spent about 5 years on active duty, most of that at Fort Carson, a little bit of time at Fort Bragg. Interesting enough, I got off active duty on September 1st, 2001, 10 days before 9/11, of course. And needless to say, I was on my 30-day transition leave with a job lined up. 9/11 happened, and the company that was going to hire me called me up and said that they were not going to be hiring me anymore because they were, in fact, going to be doing some cutbacks. So I turned around, went pretty much right back into the military, this time with the National Guard. Spent about a year with those folks and got out again. And it was working a job with a sales company here in the Raleigh-Durham area again for about a year. And I was one of those lucky folks who got called off IRR. So got mobilized to deploy to Iraq in 2003, served as the company commander over there. Came back, spent about 2.5 years in the Alabama National Guard after that. So as you could see, my my career is actually kind of unique in that I had a background and experience in active duty, IRR, National Guard, and Reserve. So all total, that added up to 10 years, and I got out as a major in 2006.
So it sounds like one of the things that we like to talk to people about is that transition period, what it's like going for being active duty and then being a civilian, being a reservist, being whatever the case is. Sounds like you had some fits and starts where you got to go through that process a few times. So what do you recall about those separations, plural, for you, and what did you learn from them?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, I did have some fits and starts, but I think like most veterans, in that transition phase, I looking back on it, I honestly had no idea what I was going to do. I mean, the natural thing that I heard as I was transitioning or getting ready to transition out was, you know, at being a junior military officer in the Army, having the leadership experience, that I was well suited for, you know, mid-level management type roles within big Fortune 500 companies, which of course is a path well suited oftentimes for a lot of veterans. but for me, the thing that was really advantageous was I had the opportunity, I think like a lot of JMOs and certainly enlisted folks with different backgrounds, I had the opportunity to connect with Orion International, which is, of course, an organization that helps veterans transition from the military to the corporate world. And they actually picked up in my background right away, at least in terms of my personality and how I carried myself, that I would be a good fit for sales, which I thought they were crazy, but it turned out that their folks knew what they were talking about. I was lucky that they actually offered me a job within their organization as an account manager, where I had the opportunity to interact with literally hundreds of different organizations and companies across the world. And I think that experience really enlightened me in a lot of ways. The thing that was really interesting about having the opportunity to work for Orion too is I became really good friends and developed a mentor relationship with the founders, Randy Nelson and Bill Lachlan, who are both veterans themselves, one a P-3 Orion pilot force and the other one a nuclear sub guy. And both those two are amazing entrepreneurs. They took me under their wing, and not only did I have the opportunity to work with veterans, learn sales and marketing inside and out, but I also learned from two great entrepreneurs, and that's actually what started me on the entrepreneurial path.
You know, Dean, and we're speaking with Dean Bunshu, former Army infantry officer, now a successful entrepreneur, sales professional, and business advisor who spent an entire career building successful businesses for himself and his clients. One of the things, Dean, that I think a lot of people worry about is having that MOS or rating in the Navy or whatever you want to call it, depending on what branch of the service you're in, that doesn't really translate to the civilian world all that well. An infantry officer is certainly one of those. There are not a job openings. There are not a lot of job openings for infantry officers out in the civilian world. So what have you found is the best way for people who are coming from the world of infantry or the world of air crew or the world of you pick a job in the military where there is no real civilian counterpart? What have you found is the best way for them to go about trying to find their spot in the civilian world?
I mean, really what you got to do is you have to really learn how to translate your resume. So individuals that serve in the military, I don't care, you know, what level you are, chances are if you're getting out after at least 4 years experience, no matter what rank, you're going to have some leadership in your background, whether it's, you know, a team leader, squad leader, you know, on the enlisted side, or of course, as an officer, as a lieutenant, and other multiple roles. But needless to say, that the biggest thing that the folks need to do is get involved with some of the organizations like Orion, and there's certainly all different kinds of ones now out there that can help you translate your leadership skills and your soft skills, and put those front and center. And on top of that, you know, again, it's just like myself. A lot of times I think veterans underestimate some of the soft skills they had or some of the skills that they don't even realize that they've developed in the military. You know, for me, it was the interpersonal skills, just having that, having the ability to be able to get up in front of people, to relate to people, and of course, to get people passionate or motivated to accomplish mission. Again, how, if you think about doing things like that, people always think of sales as direct sales, B2B, you know, B2C. But it's not. I mean, almost everything you do as a leader is sales in a lot of ways. So I think a lot of people don't understand that when they're transitioning assets, they think, okay, sales experience means that, you know, I have some type of experience selling something tangible. It's not. A lot of times it's selling people on the ability to get things done. So I think that's just another example. When you're someone who's, you know, in a background like mine or some of the other ones that you underestimate. And I can tell you firsthand, having the opportunity to work out at Ryan, that a lot of those, you know, combat leader type MOSs, especially people who really were responsible for motivating, driving people, really translate well into a sales type background. And to me, that's a great gateway to entrepreneurship in a lot of ways too, because again, as an entrepreneur, you know, almost everything you do is selling people internally and externally. Hopefully that helps.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting, you know, you bring up the combat leadership. And one of the things that I've been kind of fascinated by is people that I came across during my 13 years that I served, people that have come across through this show, through other veterans organizations, who have been in the line of fire, literally, who have been in the scariest situations that a human being can imagine, who are still intimidated by the business world. Do you think there's a way that our veterans particularly can help kind of get over that fear that they have of this new thing that they're heading towards, that being, you know, the professional world outside of the military?
Yeah. You know what I think? I think the biggest challenge that veterans have is they fear that connection and loss to the loss of access to the tribe, in essence. And by that, I mean, you know, with a lot of the veterans, it's like while you're in the military, the veterans around you provide a lot of security. They're the folks that you can go to. You know, you obviously have a ton in common. So I think what they worry about the most is as they transition out is that they're actually going to lose that connection. They're going into a world where they don't have, they're not surrounded by a bunch of like-minded people. So the thing I always tell veterans is if you're looking for different opportunities, look at the organization and look at the organization that you're seeking out, and then look for veterans within that organization. During the hiring process, obviously, I mean, there's great resources like LinkedIn. Get on there. You'll be really surprised too. Well, I think they'll be really surprised in that a lot of these organizations do a tremendous job of hiring other veterans, especially some of the bigger companies. I know here at Bunker Labs, you know, all the different organizations that we work with that are partners of ours, especially corporate sponsors like MetLife and JP Morgan Chase and some of the others have veteran affinity groups. You know, reach out to those individuals prior to you getting hired during the interview process, you know, after you get hired, and get plugged back in with people who, again, can who you obviously have a lot of comfort with, who understand your background, who have been through that transition process themselves. I think all that goes a long way. And the same thing goes, even if, you know, it's not a specific organization, depending on what career field you're trying to get into, you know, get on LinkedIn, you know, get out in the community, find other veterans, get plugged back in with those veterans. And that makes that whole entire process a heck of a lot easier and way less intimidating.
We're speaking with Dean Bunshu. Dean is an entrepreneur, accomplished sales professional, and business advisor, also former infantry officer with a combat tour in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Now, Dean, you just mentioned Bunker Labs. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved with the good folks over at Bunker Labs.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, especially for me, it combines almost pretty much everything that I love and enjoy doing. You know, as we discussed, coming up through Orion International, having that opportunity to continue to work with veterans was something I loved. And then, of course, becoming an entrepreneur myself is really where my passion lays. So, you know, really what Bunker Labs allowed me to do is marry those two up. by working with veterans and helping them start and grow businesses. So I really had it in the back of my mind when I became an entrepreneur, you know, over 12 years ago, that at some point I wanted to either start or get involved with an organization that could help other veterans start and grow businesses. And, you know, I've always kept a really close eye on the state or on the state of affairs within the space. And on top of that, I've worked with a lot of different organizations within this community, encouraged them, you know, to really go after and help veterans transition to entrepreneurship. And when I saw Bunker Labs start several years ago up at 1871, I guess a little over 3 years now, by Todd Connor, it caught my interest. And I went on my way to track their progress, saw that they started expanding out to a couple cities, thought about launching my own organization here in North Carolina. But I was like, why the heck, if these guys are doing great things, would I want to do that when I could work with other great veterans and we could all build this together? So reached out to Todd, just about 2 years ago exactly. And we planted the flag here in Raleigh, Durham, back in December 2016, and been up and running, for a little over a year and a half now. So, and made a ton of progress since then too.
And one of the things that Bunker Labs does, now, of course, they have fantastic programs for veterans who have that entrepreneurial spirit, the vetrepreneurs, as we call them, of course. They have the Bunker in a Box program and so many other great things that veterans can do from their home, essentially, or from their workspace. But they also do these great conferences, and there's actually one coming up this Thursday in Raleigh-Durham. So tell us a little bit about the Muster Raleigh-Durham, part of the Muster Across America through Bunker Labs. What's taking place there and who can it help?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the tour itself, as you mentioned, is a 16 city tour across the United States. And really they're designed as events to catalyze the entire veteran entrepreneur community. And for that matter, the entire entrepreneur community. So last year was our first one. This is going to be our second annual. We do it in partnership with J.P. Morgan Chase and our hosts, our MetLife. They have a incredible technology campus down here, and they're as I mentioned, their veteran affinity group. It's one of the best in the country that I've ever seen, run by Tim McClain. He's a former Army captain himself, so. They're our hosts, and basically what the event does is it brings together entrepreneurs and innovators and gives veterans and our partners and other community leaders the opportunity to share really big ideas. So last year we had well over 300 and some participants, to include 250 some veterans, of which over 80 of those were vet-run businesses. We basically have an interactive format with over 14 workshops and panels that are supported by over 40 entrepreneurs. A good portion of those are veteran entrepreneurs and community leaders. We have an awesome pitch contest. This year we got 12 companies that are taking part in that, where they have the opportunity to compete for some prizes, to include $5K in cash. And then throughout the day, we have some incredible keynote speakers like Daniel Alark from Grunt Style, Marcus Ogden, the former NFL football player that basically went from the football to losing everything to building everything back up, to some other folks like Art Pappas, who is a former Vietnam era Special Forces individual who runs Pappas Ventures, which is probably one of the most successful biotech investment VC type investment firms here in the Southeast. So that's hopefully gives you a pretty good feel for the day. The event is about 10 people away from being sold out. So we're expecting an awesome crowd once again, and I really appreciate that for everyone just coming out and getting involved.
Wow, yeah. So veterans who are interested in that, of course, you can Google Bunker Labs, Raleigh-Durham Muster RDU, but I imagine there's actually a website that people can go to find out all about Bunker Labs RDU, which is the Raleigh-Durham-based unit of Bunker Labs. Where can they go to find out more about that?
Sure. So it's www.bunkerlabsrdu.org. And as you mentioned, if you just add a /muster onto the back end of that, or you just navigate through the website, you'll see it. We have it pretty much front and center. So that talks a lot about our organization, the programs we offer, and more specifically what the muster is all about this year.
And you know, one of the interesting things, as I look at these things, Dean, when I look at these different events that they have for veterans out there, the sponsorship behind them, the people who are putting in the effort, there's really a, it seems like a groundswell of support for the veteran community, for helping us find our way in the civilian world. Have you gotten a real good sense of that during your time since you left and your time with Bunker Labs?
Yeah, I mean, the Bunker Labs is really enlightening in a lot of ways, just because you really, once you're a VSO, a veteran service organization, and you're out there working in the space, you kind of figure out who everyone is and all those different organizations are that help veterans. I think one of the challenges is there's so many organizations out there that are helping veterans, and a lot of them are doing such a great job. It's difficult sometimes for a veteran that's transitioning to navigate and figure out what services are right for him. So in a lot of ways, Bunker Labs, we try to be that central point within the communities that we operate in. We're a super collaborative organization that goes out of its way to, you know, really partner with the organization specific to veteran entrepreneurship. But I mean, just VSOs a lot of ways in general, because, you know, we do cross paths with so many different veterans because we're active, you know, with the National Guard community, the Reserve community, all the active components across the state of North Carolina. And as we run across those veterans, we want to be able to help them in any way we can. And of course, one of the best ways is not only through what we do, but also for ones that are looking for different paths, it's being able to point them in the right direction. So that's something that we try to do, is be the central point for veterans as they transition and be able to show them what resources are there to help them out.
When you look at the veteran community down in the Raleigh-Durham area, of course, a lot of areas around the country have heavy veteran populations. Raleigh-Durham, mm-hmm. certainly one of them. How do you see veterans faring around the Raleigh-Durham area?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. A lot of people don't realize overall we're the third largest military population in the country when you consider the 780-some thousand veterans who are in the state, and then add, of course, the active duty component, because we have seven major military installations in the state. And, you know, certainly here in the Raleigh-Durham area, I think our vet population is doing pretty well. Clearly, there's this area was in a lot of ways insulated from what happened, you know, back in 2007, 2008. A lot of people probably have seen pretty much year in and year out. Raleigh-Durham, the greater Raleigh-Durham area, is recognized as one of the top places to work. You know, has one of the best cost of livings. I think we have one of the lowest unemployment rates, you know, within this community, you know, in the country. So, of course, that makes it pretty easy for veterans to find opportunities here in a lot of different ways, especially ones with tech backgrounds. I mean, we have all the big tech giants that have a huge presence here, the companies like Cisco's and SAS and IBM, but also I've seen a lot of veteran entrepreneurs, you know, find a home in our big startup communities. We have one of the top up and coming, you know, certainly top 10, arguably top 5 startup communities in the area, especially downtown Durham with the American Underground, but the Raleigh startup community is expanding as well. And the more we do what we do, the more we're seeing not only veteran start companies, but because these veterans are starting a lot of companies in this area, a lot of them are hiring other veterans. So I think that's creating a lot of opportunities for the vets in this community. And the same goes with Charlotte. You know, Charlotte's much like Raleigh. It's one of the top up-and-coming communities. So certainly the opportunities for veterans here in the Charlotte area, in the Raleigh-Durham area, and in several other communities, the prospects are pretty good. So I encourage people to come find out for themselves. And if they're transitioning out of Fort Bragg, do like I did, stay in the area.
And of course, we've been speaking with Dean Bunchu, who is from Bunker Labs Raleigh-Durham, a.k.a. Bunker Labs RDU. You can visit their website, bunkerlabsrdu.org, to find out more about them. They've got a mailing list on there. I believe there's some free stuff that's provided to veterans, too, as far as advice and assistance. Isn't that right as well, Dean?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, whether it's our site, but more specifically the corporate site too, you know, there's resource links that provides free templates and free resources. And, you know, the other thing I heard you mention is the opportunity if you want to learn more about entrepreneurship. You know, Bunker in a Box is a completely free, self-paced online program that's really designed to give individuals a really good introduction to entrepreneurship. So, you know, when people are considering transitioning into entrepreneurship, that's one of the first resources that we point them to. And the feedback's outstanding because, I mean, there's hundreds of hours of great curated content and all kinds of original content now, too, as we have, of course, expanded our programs and captured a lot of that online and on video and try to get it out there and share it with the community so people can get a taste for kind of what entrepreneurship's all about and kind of decide early on if it's maybe something they want, you know, to give a shot or a path to go down.
And of course, there's also now a Bunker Labs app I'm seeing on the Bunker Labs RDU.org page. And if you're not in Raleigh, Durham, if you're just hearing about Bunker Labs for the first time, there's probably a chapter somewhere near you, and you can go to BunkerLabs.org to find out about all the great things they're doing for veterans. The Bunker Labs RDU Muster, that's taking place this Thursday down in Raleigh, Durham. And as Dean Bunshu, who we've been speaking to, told us, there's only a few spots left. So you definitely, if you're interested in that, you want to make sure that you check out their website and see if that's something that might interesting you, that might interest you. You've been listening to The Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer. And yes, he is quitting smoking, and you'll be able to follow his progress right here on the show every morning, 7 to 8:30 Eastern and Pacific. And of course, at ConnectingVets.com. And follow us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. All the big four. We are there, and we'll be here again tomorrow morning. Big thanks to all of our guests, Jake Hughes, Justin Brown, Jonathan Kopanger, and Dean Bunshu of Bunker Labs. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.